November 30th, 2022 is what for Pedro's show.
The vegetable will help you so much, but is this the vegetable really help you so much? Or why did you decide to be the man of the vegetable man?
Well, I feel that I guess it's more of a spiritual reason than any other reason in my with me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I find that it causes me to be much calmer.
Oh, I see.
Mm-hmm. Person, you mm-hmm. know, and the nerves, you know, mm-hmm. how much
yes,
calmer, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And,
Oh, really? If you try to check that, you
that's
know,
me. I don't know if it'd be the same with everybody, you see. But
I
this
see.
I found out in my own experiments. I found this out.
Mm-hmm.
And I have less trouble, you know, mm-hmm. being in command of my passions and emotions
mm-hmm.
and so forth.
I see.
And my body has less mm-hmm. work to do in grinding this food up. So therefore, I have more energy to
focus. That's really great. That's helped me too much. Well, I'm skinny enough, and then
you gotta get some milkshakes.
No, well, I want to get like you. See, if I can get like you, I don't think I got too much of this on here, man.
Well, that's great.
What for Pedro show? Happy Wednesday. Brother Matt, how you doing?
Wonderful. Everything is great. On this
I think the gray sky's going to turn blue.
It's got a little rain in the forecast.
Is that right?
So
okay, that's what.
They
so
keep
it's
changing.
Not a marine layer. It's not a burn-off.
They keep changing their mind.
Okay, they keep changing. The only thing that stays the same is change. We start off the show, John Coltrane talking to Kazuaki Tsujimoto in Tokyo 1966 about why he's a vegetable man. And then we have the Untouchables with Nick Fit. Thurston covered that, right? Or sorry. You know, by the incredible ingenuity of those Estonian software engineers with their Skype invention, we have Bored, Alec McKay. Put my board out. You there?
Hey, okay. I'm here.
Okay. Thought we lost you already.
I don't know. I wasn't sure if I was supposed to talk yet or not.
No. Yeah, when you get, you're allowed to reply on the What from Pedro. Remember, there's no hard questions and there's no wrong answers.
You'll see. I got a couple of wrong answers for you, but
well,
let's get there.
Okay. Question number one.
Yeah.
What is your earliest musical recollection?
Earliest musical recollection. It's not a particular music per se, but my family had an old Grundig stereo, like a German stereo. It was more like furniture, you know, like wood, made of wood, had legs. Stood in the dining room and had these speakers that swung out, and then it had a kind of a floating turntable, and you had a bunch of LPs stuck in the bottom. And I'm trying to think of what kind of records my parents had, but I do remember loving to play records on that machine and sitting there with those speakers on either side of me. And then really for music, I remember finding a Beethoven. Well, I didn't know what it was then, but I found a flexi disc that was in somebody's yard. It was like blowing around like leaves and it'd been torn out of a magazine or something, and I brought it home and played it and I pictured, a bear, I think, is what I imagined, or some wolf, or I don't remember what, but I pictured something to go with the music, and then a long time later discovered that it was a Beethoven song. But that would be like the first actual recollection. And then when I got started selecting music that I wanted to.
Yeah, let me ask you this. What was the first record you bought with your own money?
Oh, first record I bought with my own money, Queen. Jazz. The one that's got it opens up and it's got a bunch of ladies on bicycles. And I remember I was in the backseat of my parents' car. We had stopped at a gas station in Delaware, and I went in and bought that record. I went in there and they had records, and I bought that because I liked Queen on the radio. And then we got in the car, and I opened it up, and it had all these naked ladies in it. And I was very quiet in the backseat. I didn't want my parents to know.
The humbler. The humbler.
Yeah.
So what was the first gig you saw, Alec?
The first what, show?
Yeah.
Well, first show really would be Santana with and Brick and Rufus with Chaka Khan opening.
You know who I heard, Brother Matt, just moved to Pedro, was one of a guy who played bass for a long time for Carlos Santana.
Really?
Oh.
I wouldn't shit you.
Wow.
Yeah, this is what, in fact, James Allen, right? You know, who moved to town, you know.
His big scoop.
Now, Alec, this pad you grew up in. Musical instruments there?
Piano.
Did you have to go through the piano lesson experience?
My brother did. I did. I did, except for I couldn't, I had a piano teacher for just a minute, and her name was Mrs. Grocock, if you can believe that.
Yeah.
I just remember getting dropped off at her house. It was one of those things where she did the lessons from her house, and my parents would take me to the door, and then they would leave. And we'd go into her house, and she always had all the lights off except one over by the piano. And then she'd make me go wash my hands, which I know was probably normal, but made me feel really dirty because we were sort of hippie-ish kids, I guess. I had long hair. And I just felt really ashamed, and I had a real negative experience. And I don't remember really learning much from her, and then I just didn't want to go anymore. So I didn't work for me, but that was...
No, a lot of the cats we've had on the show almost made him quit fucking music. A horrible experience a lot of times. What about at school? Were you in the marching band or the choir, shit like that?
No, no, never did anything curricular or extracurricular in school. So no.
Well, I ask about music because a lot of schools got rid of their arts programs.
Yeah.
Okay, that's why I asked that. Now, what about after school? Not graduating, but in the afternoon. The garage band, bedroom band, basement band thing?
You just played The Untouchables. I was 14 in that band.
Were you playing guitar besides singing?
No, I sang in that band.
Okay, how did you get on the guitar? Well, the voice is an instrument, too. We'll get into that.
Yeah, okay. You want me to answer that question now?
Bring.
Guitar, yeah. That was later on in the Warmers, and Amy Farina and Juan Carrera were playing together. They were bass and drum, and they just had such the perfect situation. And then I was going to sing, and we were looking for a guitar player, and every guitar player seemed to be stepping all over the perfect thing. And so I just was like, how about if we don't – let me play the guitar. And by that I mean not play the guitar.
Or learn in public, learn in front of people.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but I did learn in front of people.
That's what I mean. We call them pants shitters, but it ends up getting done. But, okay, so the guitar came while you're already in a few bands. So, okay, your first instrument then was your voice. Now, how'd you get into that?
It's funny, actually, you say that, because I told everybody I was a bass player. I didn't tell everybody. I told some
people. Yeah, I'm into that.
Yeah. My brother had a bass, and I knew, in the house at that point, and I was at a punk rock show and just dancing and doing my thing, and a woman came up to me and asked, she said I had great stage presence, and did I play any instruments? And I looked at her as like right off the bat, I said, yeah, I play bass. Why? I never even tried. she said, I'm putting together a band, and here's my phone number, or no, give me your phone number. She wanted my phone number, so I remember writing my phone number on her. She had like an envelope full of something, and she never called me. It's kind of just as well, because the band, when they finally got going, it was not a band I wouldn't have wanted to be in. But as soon as I said that, had that exchange, when I got home, I started trying to learn how to play bass right away, so that in case I ever did get that call, I would have some kind of thing going on. But then later on when we formed that band, the Untouchables, I was supposed to, you know, we had one member who was all, who had a guitar and knew how to play. That was Eddie Janney, Eddie Machete, who later on went to be in Rites of Spring and Happy Go Licky and so forth. But he could play guitar. But then other people in the band didn't know. You know, we just like, what do you want to play? And they're saying I should be the drummer. So I borrowed some drums, and we live in a row house back then. And I remember trying to figure out drums. And then my next door neighbor, who was this type A, like Rage Hall guy, he came over and just, you know, basically said, "You're not doing that, you know, no way." So I couldn't play drums in my house. Yeah, shut me down.
So what we're talking about here is bass, yeah. No bass, drums, no drums, voice.
Right.
Yes, voice.
Yeah, can't take that away from me. So,
well, ball gag, but we could bring in the ball gag, but.
Right. No, nobody thought of that back then.
Well, that's why we had you on the show there, Alec.
Enlightened
all the options. So, okay. So, Untouchables, when does that band start?
That would be in
like you said, like you were 14?
1979, yeah. I had just turned 14.
And what makes you want to do it? Was it the movement? Going to punk shows?
Going to punk shows and just really, it never even occurred to me not to do it. You know, it seemed like that was perfectly a reasonable and great idea. It never even occurred to me that there would be any obstacles to doing it.
I think that is righteous. Yeah. And the way the band members came together, was it random or was it calculated?
I was the youngest. Other folks in the band were like a year or two older than me. And we got a drummer who, I mean, I would say about 80% of the reason he was in the band was because he had a car and a driver's license, none of which the rest of us had. And he could drive us around and do things. So they all knew each other. The other three people knew each other from their first year at high school. Then I was brand new at high school. And I knew them through music. And one of the bass player at that point was a neighbor of mine that kid I used to skate with named Bert Kiros, who I still know. I just stayed with him in Berlin about a month ago.
That's great. Let's play another Untouchables song. It's a little tender sweet thing called I Hate You.
Yeah.
I hate you. and Mike Watt, we played for years.
Punk rock changed our lives.
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 Bleib doch noch hier bei mir. Komm, Schöne, schau mich doch an. Schmink dir den Mund, stoß mich gesund. Tanz mich, ich bin ein Vulkan. Wer die Sehnsucht kennt, ach, nur wer die Sehnsucht kennt. Mit Schürchen so rot, komm, trampel mich tot. Erst weg von diesem Fleck, fließen die Tränen dir heiß. Wer die Liebe kennt, ach, nur wer die Liebe kennt.
From Pedro Show, that chunk of music started off with Untouchables. So I hate you. And up around, this is a 7-inch that's coming out Friday by the Matt. This Tim Kerr's got this new band called Up Around the Sun, and this Red Parakeet label, part of American Laundry, Matt, asked us to do a 7-inch where him and his big boys have me and my guys, my second man, my missing man, also do one of theirs. And then we do I mean, they do one of ours. So he picked History Lesson Part 2.
Oh, cool.
So that's what we heard there. And he got all these cats, even, you know, John Doe's in the song, the word. He got him to do that spiel.
Oh, man, how cool.
Yeah, Tim Kerr's, you know, he's doing a lot of painting these days, too, and stuff. He's just a beautiful man. And then we had, Mike Watt, the second Missing Man, right? They're both together, two in one of their songs. We Got Soul, which was, you know, that first record there is kind of like Cool and the Gang. And that was like one of their tunes, but it sounded, and I think Hollywood Swingin's on that record.
Oh, bitchin', yeah. Right.
You know it. Oh, it's a 6-song 10-inch, right? Yeah. And then, then The Faith after that. Now the first record, it's The Faith. The next record is just Faith. I'm paying attention a little bit to details. It's Face to Face. And then Shovel Dance Collective with One. This is a 4-song album they did. It's beautiful stuff. What you can make into music. The Faith again with Trap. Then Yal Bobby and Simon Grab with Church. Faith, not The Faith people. Faith with Aware. Then Bull Shannon, brand new band with Chris Candy.
Cool.
Yeah,
hey,
I think Chuck will get those over. That's what he's doing now. And Kim Baum and Kessner out of Berlin. Funny you mentioned that town. With Pompeji. And finally, again, Faith, not The Faith people. Subject to Change. Okay, Alec, what's the first song you wrote for the Untouchable guys?
That's the I Hate You. That was the first song.
Yeah. Now, was that the first song you ever wrote ever?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. And where'd you guys get the name Untouchables?
Oh, yeah. That's kind of, you know, we were just trying to think of things to of any kind of a band name. And I think I'm like 99% sure, although he doesn't remember it, but this guy, Jem Cohen, who's a filmmaker that, did that Fugazi instrument film and a bunch of other stuff. He's a great filmmaker, but he's in our high school and he threw it out there just as a kind of a joke about Elliot Ness.
Elliot Ness, right, G-Man.
Yeah, the old Robert Stack thing or whatever. Not, I mean, who was the, well, anyway, they were the old version, like a TV show or something. And then we just kind of like, oh, you know, it kind of like is a cool gang name too, you know, like it's like, don't touch me kind of thing. Like we're untouchable. And then, you know, we just sort of like thought it through.
Kind of like impressive.
But it, you know, it was teenage wisdom.
And what happened to the band? How long do you guys last? Do you remember the first Untouchables gig?
Absolutely. The first Untouchables gig was the first Teen Idols gig, which was my brother's. First band, sort of. We debuted on the same night in a guy's basement in Palisades neighborhood of D.C. And I remember my grandmother came to the show.
Whoa.
And but a bunch
did
of
did she cut the shit
band.
And start the pit?
Yeah, hell yeah. She's all about it. But,
okay, what happened to the what? But you would call the gig a success.
2.5 years, I would say. I think it was the run. It was right when the drummer went to college, so we got a different drummer. I can't remember what the final blow was, but there was decision to.
They happen. It happens. But tell me about The Faith.
Yeah. Faith was then, that really came out of Henry. Henry's band, his first band before
SOA?
Black Flag, he's in SOA.
Yeah,
and when he left to go be in Black Flag, he was like, you should sing for my band, or you should take over, basically, you know, like to, and we didn't exactly do that, but with the rest, you know, minus the bass player, it was Michael Hampton, myself, and Ivor Hansen, and then I knew this guy, Chris Bald, he had just started into my high school, and he'd been away for a while and came back, and we decided he'd be a good bass player. And that's how that happened. That was, it was just a few months after Untouchables broke up.
Do you remember the first gig of The Faith?
Yeah, that was at there was this high school out in Arlington, just across the river from D.C. It was a kind of a progressive high school called Woodlawn, H.B. Woodlawn, and they would have regular punk shows in the cafe or cafeteria. And our first show was there. I think we played with like Iron Cross and He was one of the, like, four band things.
That's Dante. Was Dante on drums?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He was the guy who runs the Black Cat, brother. Man.
Correct. Yep.
And
that was later on. Mm-hmm.
And now the Face stays together longer than Untouchables?
Yeah. But not too much longer.
Me and Dee Boone used to notice about the Discord bands. They usually break up before the record comes out.
I know. There's a built-in self-destruct button there for some reason. I'm not sure what that was about. But yeah, maybe the first record would get out, maybe, but definitely before the second one. I guess every second record is posthumously released.
Now, Untouchables probably didn't tour, but did the Faith tour?
We didn't tour, but we played around. We went.
Not even a 995 tour.
Yeah, we did the 995. Yes, we did. Yes, we did a East Coast Central, like Mid Atlantic. So we went up to I think it's actually our second show. We played with the Bad Brains at CBGB's, and it was Christmas night of 1982.
Whoa.
Played up there with the Bad Brains, and then another time we went up and played at A7.
Yeah, that's where they kind of held court, right? Adam Yauch telling me about.
That's where the Beastie Boys are all hanging out there.
Right, right. He told me Daryl Jennifer taught him how to play bass. Then he taught the rest of the guys, Harvitz and Diamond. Well, I guess they had a lady at first. But let me ask you, the first recording you did was with Untouchables, right?
Uh-huh.
What was that like? What was the studio?
Oh, the studio was a guy named Steve Carr. He had his own studio in his mother's basement called Hit and Run Studios. And he had two brothers, one of whom played... His little brother Tommy played in the Penetrators, who were a great like early DC punk band, and also in Black Market Baby, and then a bunch of things after that. But and then his older brother, whose name I'm blanking on right now, played with Tex Urbanowitz and the Bad Boys, who were Tex Urbanowitz is this amazing rockabilly, just I don't know how to describe him, just a super badass older rockabilly dude. And then Steve Carr was in. I forgot his band. Anyway,
did you guys go into the studio with the? Was it like a gig in front of the microphones, or did you write the songs in the studio?
Oh no, we had them. The songs were ready.
Okay, like Minutemen Ways. It was basically like a gig. In fact, to save money, we would record in order so we didn't have to spend money on editing and sequencing. So they basically were like gigs in front of the microphone. I was just curious about that. Yeah. Now, when you were writing songs for the Faith, had it changed from writing songs for the Untouchables?
I think so. I didn't really do a lot of composition, to be honest.
You didn't write the words?
At that point. Well, I do, not all the time, no. And definitely not, I'm trying to think of the Untouchables. Everybody was writing words in the Untouchables. I remember that because some of the songs were we were just trying to get some material.
I'm always interested in the process, how things, you know, because it's just sound coming into the ear hole. Look, Alec, we're at the end of the first hour of the November 30, 2022 edition of the Watt from Pedro Show, starring you, Alec McKay. Hold tight for hour two. November 30, 2022. It's the second hour of the Watt from Pedro Show.
This is a song about a duck in love.
Oh, Lord have mercy, you know.
Charge ahead, breaking walls. I prefer to go around. You want to the charm's all gone. Smile no longer covers up your calm. Don't worry about it, cuz I knew what it was. Shady is as shady does. Well, wait until you see what I am gonna do right now. Hey! What I'm gonna do.
Our show started off the second hour with Hammered Holes, Abstract City. Sam Bennett out of, after that, originally from Birmingham, Alabama, but now in Tokyo, Japan, with Decoy or A Duck's Lament. And then out of Hokkaido, the same country, Shape of Raw to Come. Scrapers Papers. I don't know where they're from, but what a name. Some dude sent me, he said, I want to turn you on to my favorite band, Watt. And I said, well, cool. With a name like that. Mr. Papers Has a Laugh. That's the name of the tune. So, yeah, it's a thing, a recurring theme. Hammered Hulls after that with Written Word. I thought they fit. In fact, you gave me two versions of Written Word. Well, no, same version, but twice. Files. Screamers after that. You want some 70s Hollywood punk? It's Sex Boy. You know, they wouldn't make records because they thought videos was the thing. Yeah. Gebedan after this. Gebedan has got on bass Mike Patton from Adolescence and Eddie and the Subtitles. Also produced some, like the Minuteman Joy EP. He now lives in Athens, Georgia, and he started up a new band. He was running the buses in Orange County. The bus system, yeah. And he retired from that, and he moved to Athens, Georgia. He shows up at the gig, like, whoa. Southern California.
Wow.
Yeah. And so he's got this new band, Gebedan. That's Achilles. The Wicked Lowdown. Now, I said they were from Texas. Only one guy's from Texas. It's a New England band. Okay. But they play the blues thing. Great cat named Mike. 52 P bass.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Classic.
Yeah. That's some Ching Quan Do. And then finally, Hammered Hulls with Needlepoint Tiger. So enlighten us about Hammered Hulls there, Alec.
To what end?
How did it come together? Because obviously there's some bands that we're going to play next hour, like Warmers and Ignition, that came before. But since we're in Hammered Hull land right now, enlighten us to how it came together.
Okay, it's mostly Mark Cisneros, who I think you've had on your program.
In fact, he's the one who hipped me to having you on the show.
Oh, good. All right. Amazing musician on every level. Brilliant person, brilliant, and a sweetheart. He and the drummer, Chris Wilson, were putting together a project, or hoping to anyway, talking about playing together. And then also Mark and Mary Timoney, they also have been playing together on a different thing. And they both
Helium, right?
Music. Yes, Houston Helium and X-Hex more recently, and she and very popular solo musician, and she's done, and also my neighbor.
I think Ash was playing bass in Helium. He had this band, Povel.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Anyway, yeah, exactly. So you got brought into the band. You didn't start the band. Okay.
So I was the last element, and at some point Chris had asked if I'd want to, you know, I think people thought I'd like gotten out of music. I hadn't played in so long. And I guess that's a form of getting out, but it wasn't like I didn't close any books or end any chapters or anything like that. It just hadn't happened. But we were talking, and I'll say right up front that each of these persons were people that I admired immensely in the things that they do. I loved all of their, they're just amazing people, amazing musicians. So I was talking to him at some, I think it was a Ted Leo show, because he played with Ted Leo, the Pharmacists, and he was asking if I'd ever considered being in a band. I was like, yeah, absolutely, you know, it depends on who it is, but and then he took that to Mark, and Mark and him talked about it, and then Mark really wanted to, and wanted to do a thing with Mary, and we just all agreed on it. But and Mark had a lot of he had most of those tunes already sort of kind of blocked out, you know, like not they weren't fully formed yet, but he had a whole bunch of tunes ready to go.
He knows how to play everything, right?
He can play everything. Yeah. Yes, he can.
Yeah. So everything. He kind of had ideas what people were going to do and stuff. And so like this new record, right? When did it come out, last year?
Mm-hmm.
Or this year? It came out this year, right?
Yeah, just now in October. Yeah.
In October. Yeah. Okay. It
took two years to make it. I mean, we went in the day before, you know, shutdown or whatever, COVID shutdown in 20, got the tracks done, the just the instruments, and then we stopped and didn't go. And then I went back in completely raw a year and a half later and did the vocals. And that was rough, man.
What about of course. Believe me, man, when I had my surgery, first time I stopped playing bass since Dee Boone's mom, right? 12 years old, she puts me on, and man, I couldn't do it worth shit, man. So it was a lot of Little Doll over and over and over. The Stooges. So in this Hammered Hulls, are you the word meister?
Yeah.
So what, Mark would like present you the music, and then you'd like And would he come up with a theme, or was that your job?
Oh, I did every. I mean, words-wise, I did. I mean, you know, mostly what it was is I discovered earlier when I was in the warmers that I could see words in the music easier than I could make up a song, you know, like a narrative or whatever. It was harder for me to have an idea and then build a song. But if we could just get in the space together, and grind it out and make the music, I would see the words in the melody, in the, you know, I'd hear a word, and I'd fall on you to one foothold, and then I'd build out from that. And so all the songs were just in the practice space. They would just start, they were playing them and also sort of finishing them, I guess you'd say. So while they were doing that, the rest of the musicians, you know, getting the song into a intelligible set piece, then I was just thinking of the words in, you know, I could just see like in the sound waves. And that's how we did that.
It was kind of like inspiring. Like an inspiration, something to like to, right? Because you don't want an assembly line thing. You want each tune to have its own persona, so you would like feel for the trip that they were bringing. Yeah. Now, did you guys made a record before this, or is this the first one?
Hammered Hull. We had a 7-inch.
Okay. So Hammered Hull's did gigs too, then, right?
Say it one more time.
Hammered Hull's did gigs.
Oh we did gigs. You know, a couple of years ago, and then we took the, you know, whatever, the pandemic off, and now we're back. We just did a bunch of shows out to the Midwest.
Yeah, because I'm not sure the timeline and stuff. What was the first Hammered Hull's gigs like?
We played at the Black Cat anniversary party thing. I don't know what, I think it was the 25th anniversary for Black Cat, and we just did a few songs.
And I was one of those nights. Dante's. Yeah, that's
right. Yeah.
Yeah, I had a great after show performance. That was incredible. Look, how would you say, so it seems like with Untouchables, with Faith, with Hammered Hull, these were all somebody else's bands, right, that you come in to help out?
Yeah, it does seem like it. I mean, that's at least the way it feels to me. It's funny that way. If I'm invited, then I want to be in, but I'm not going to try and push it together, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. That's considerate, because a lot of kids, you know, people got to learn from Brother Alec. You know, when you ask, then you bring. Don't foist, please. And okay, this just came out. Are you guys going to tour?
Yeah, we're touring the way that we can, you know, like it's different now, it seems like. So it's just, we're going to do small tours. It's always like 4 or 5 shows, so far. And then I guess when, maybe in May, you know, springtime, we'll get out to the West Coast and do maybe 10 days, you know, none of these, so far anyway. I have a full time job. I'm right now at my job in a art museum. I work regular gig, and everybody else is also in other bands. I mean, that's the thing. So we have a scheduling stuff that it seems to work for the best right now, but it's not, they're not long slog tours.
That makes good sense. You know, life is a journey, and you evolve, you adapt, and speaking of which, we've reached a point in the show to bring Brother Matt's spin cycle.
Evolve and adapt to the broken gear. So we're going to go back about 40 years or so for some more knucklehead defiance from those dudes from New Alliance. And Cracks in the Sidewalk. Here we go. We'll be right back.
America means everything to me.
I'm tied to a clock. I can't say no. I'm doing it to myself. Put my brain right in my nose. Right. Bust us down. Got a low. I've got to pay your time. Got to collect my reward. I've got to get in line. Make me feel the fucking bored. Fight, fuck us down. Got to move. Most devil's favor. Well done. Black spot started that day. I can't get back. No matter how I try, yeah, get that fucker off my back. No, fuck us down. Gotta move. You move them on papers. Well, so that's how I wake me up in the morning. I don't know. Make my brain ready for a spin. I don't think it's different today. I ain't taking no more. I'm gonna work. Knock that fucker off the wall. That's right. Go home. Let us down. Gotta move. We both have our brain moves. Real small. Don't stop.
Okay.
Beans in it. William Burroughs, Brian Dyson, for Hoffman, Saba.
I would ask Brian about the actual techniques taught or used there, element, or broached other such like slippery areas he would clam up. He didn't know. He was just a sorcerer's apprentice. Now, I feel much the same. In Dublin, at the Here to Go show, 1992, there was a public session called Remembering Brian, and some of the usual suspects were assembled to drag out the usual stuff. Brian, who invented the dream machine? Brian, who turned to me in the bus after the light flickering between the trees at Spacey Mountain, said, "Wow, man, like you're the prophet of the beat. I swear to Allah that if this thing ever gets off the ground, I'll cut you in for half the bucks. But being a man of integrity, I cut." I, for my part, answered that, "For me, this was extremely difficult because where is everybody? I simply did not remember Brian in the usual sense. To do so, to really remember him, requires an enormous effort of recapitulation because what he taught was not accessible to ordinary consciousness. The only way to reach him is to follow him then. What on earth really happened to me? What techniques? Where is everybody? Who can say? Not me."
To go into his Ryan studio and watch him make a drawing. That was fascinating. I'd never seen anything like it. He was working only with India ink, colored India inks, and he had very fine brushes, and he spotted drops of various colored inks over the paper. It was all on paper. And while they were still wet, he took another sheet of paper of the same size and dimensions, and placed it on top of what he had just done, and then moved it a fraction of a millimeter to the left or to the right or up or down. And that, it had to be done quickly, you know, watching the seconds. But that, since the undersheet was still damp, every little spot produced its shadow, either to the left or the right, and that made it great. A great difference between that and anything one could get by any other method. I mean, sure, for one to get that effect, which helps a great deal, especially in the desert pictures, because every pebble has its little
shadow,
and they're all, you know, perfectly cast by the sun. He wanted you to look at things, particularly when you were stoned. And he said, now do you see the motion? And what you were doing, you were re-seeing what he saw stoned when he painted it.
Right.
And you become Geisen. It's interesting.
And it worked. I think it was successful.
Well, I think it's
very successful.
Extremely valid, aesthetically. Every other way, of course. I didn't offer you a chocolate.
Thank you so much. What made you do what you did to us this time?
Well, the technological issues were a factor, so we made it work once again, piecing it together. Had a little bit of Burles, of Uncle Bill, wrapping things up. But prior to that, we had this side and the other side.
The first New Alliance
record. Yeah,
the
very first one, Cracks in the Sidewalk.
And we're missing some of the sailors from that boat, right?
Yeah,
we just lost one, Georgie's brother Gregory.
Right.
He was on the Kindled...
Kindled Imagination.
Right, Kindled Imagination.
And,
Ron, I think D. Boone's actually playing on that tune, and I think I'm doing bass on the Martin Tamburvich song.
Yeah, Sharp Corners, last one, huh? Spot was in there, he engineered the thing.
Oh, the whole album.
Yeah.
And then it's Special Black Flag, because this has got Dezzo singing.
Yeah, Minutemen, Black Flag, Second Trust, Kindled Imagination, Artless Entanglements, Sharp Corners, 1980.
People. Thank you so much, Brother Matt.
Thank you.
Mark Peter Show, November 30, 2022 edition. Hold tight for hour 3. November 30, 2022. It's the third hour of the Walk for Pedro show.
kills a magpie in a backyard with his homemade gin. He steals chlorine from the neighbor's swimming pool. He puts it in a coffee jar and then pours brake fluid in it. Makes a pothole using matches, but it fizzles when he runs. He tries again using the powder from the shells of his old man's shotgun, and it hisses like the feral cat he's seen, slithers like the snake he killed. It leaves a scorch mark on the pavement, badly beaten for it. He finds a playboy on the way to school and tries remembering his mom. He throws rocks at a girl he likes and he's sent home before lunch. He finds a King Kong doll beneath the bush. It's probably some rich kid's, but it roars and when he shakes it, so he drops it in a bin. It gets late, dinner time comes. He puts tin beans on white tip top. He halves it with his fingers and then shares it with the dog. He jumps a cyclone fence to the sound of his old man fucking through the evening. He finds a severed kangaroo hind leg just laying in a clearing. And there's a tendon or a tapeworm that retracts after a kick. He finds a new stench nearly makes him puke when he pokes it with a stick. He meets his friend near there and they go on to his house down the road. His sister lets him in, goes back upstairs where in a bathrobe, and there's a pillowcase full of hair clippings in a bathroom near her bra. They go outside, they find some car keys and search a V8 car. And there's a videotape in a paper bag, it's hid under the seat. They hit play on a VHS machine, start to hear flute music. And now there's two girls on a farm somewhere, and they're playing with a Labrador that rolls onto its back like it has been through this before. It's the first time he hears flute music, and the last time he thinks about girls. He sneaks back home about 10 o'clock, gets inside using the dog door. Instead, and this tank arrives at police HQ. out of five or six patrol cars, and then runs out of diesel near a Caltex service station. There's a standoff, and he's tear gassed and not heard of again. And Dee's father dies of cancer the next Christmas day. He's so hopped up on his morphine that he can't get straight. He says, "Be proud of me, my boy. You see, I am finally off the fags since they caught me upstairs smoking on the helipad. They cut the tumor off his liver, but he died without it. It seems like no one gets to choose what they can live without. You see, it don't matter about money when there ain't no way around, and you are living in a nightmare you can't bribe your way out of."
By the nickname one of the
tube burner, and young D becomes so tight, I start going pushing his Land Cruiser. Living on roofs, they shoot spotlight. They get a year's lease on a duplex, and Werner finds D somewhere gas. An unlicensed forklift driver in a fish market for cash. And he's got pictures of Adolf Hitler, antique copies of Mein Kampf, but he thinks Hitler's obsolete. And Werner's practiced to relax, but Werner finished high school, and then he studied engineering. He never did finish school, and Werner breaks the news that evening. The RAAF have said they've accepted his application to be trained to work on Hercules, 2,000 miles away. He leaves tomorrow for New South Wales and throws a party late that night. They get to drink and they're talking, then they argue, then they fight. D comes to bleeding in his bedroom, begging Werner not to go, but Werner's full weight on his back now, and face down in a pillow. He wakes up late next afternoon. Werner is long gone. He tries to find his 22, but there ain't no shells at all. He finds 5 Valium in a windshield pack, in a duffel bag and all. He sits down in front of the TV screen and washes them all down with a bottle.
You are driving the new Cherokee. Ignition jetzt, Anger Means.
Day to day, can they, what they do, they get better and
Walk for Pedro show. Start off the third hour with Ignition and their tune Throttle. Getting throttled by Ignition. That's intense. Itaga 34 and Tenko with D. Itaga is like Itaga, probably, because it's French for the 34th floor. Huh? Piano in Italian. Springtime after that. The radicalization of D. Springtime's got Jim White on drums. Incredible cat from the Dirty Three. Probably the most hair on anybody's back in the racket. Okay. With the lawnmower. I love this man. This guy can fucking play. He's badass. After, from North Carolina, Vast Tight String Conspiracy with the Vast Waltz. Ignition with Anger Means. Sam Locke Ward, Bob Buckle Jr. out of Iowa with Where I'm At. And finally, Ignition with Lucky 13. People, Alec gave me multiple songs from different bands. I wanted to get them all in because I thought there was a reason he was giving me 17 instead of 11. So, enlighten us to Ignition, Alec.
Okay. Same thing. I was the last element of the band. Dante had ridden his motorcycle cross-country and was out in San Francisco visiting Chris Bald, who was the bass player in Faith. And they talked about putting a band together, and I don't know where they came up with this guy Chris Thompson, who was in Soulside previously, or a band called Lunch Meat that became Soulside. And then they just asked if, you know, I think they talked about it, and then wanted to see if I would be interested in being in the band, and I said yes, even though Chris and I were like Chris Bald and I were old best friends from school. And even when we were in Faith, it was like, you know, we're great friends, but it was always like this crazy, he's just a volatile character, you know.
Right, right. And same MO, like they would bring the music, and then you would come up with words?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yep.
Okay. So the thing is, it's kind of the same song and dance, but it's just dance and different dancing partners.
I think so. Exactly,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, now. Now, Warmers has a connection because the drummer's your sister-in-law, right?
She is now. She wasn't then.
She wasn't then, no. No, but...
she was my drummer then.
she was yours. So you weren't the last to join in Warmers. That's right. This is how you get on guitar is Warmers. That's right.
You're right. It was
a bass player and drummer band. And then, okay.
Right. And then I was in it, and then we were looking for a guitar player, and then I started... I got Christina Ballot. Helped me to learn how to play guitar originally, loaned me her Dan Electro, and then I really did actually learn on stage. Like, we were playing shows, and I was figuring it out in front of people, and Juan was showing me shit. Well, you know, we would stop a song, and he'd put my finger in the right place, and we'd keep going. a lot of that was me just holding back. You know, I played the guitar like a percussion instrument a lot, and mostly I just cuff it so that the bass and drums could take care of everything. And, that's how we approached it.
And was the songwriting process same?
Because
now that you got a machine in your hands, do you, like, bring in the music before the words?
I can't remember. You know, I think I, music first, and then words, yep. And that's actually really where I discovered that idea of, for me, is new. I'm sure everybody else knows about it, but the idea of a sound that sounds like a word, and then that word is the introduction to the rest of the things, the rest of the words you're going to say. And I didn't have an idea first of where the whole story would be. I would just follow one word would be the opening the door to the rest of the song. And that's something I discovered playing with those guys in the basement.
Whoa. Yeah, learning by doing, man. There's something about it. There's something about it. Yeah. At least you're not going to be a cookie-cutter, rubber-stamp Xerox kind of thing. Here, I want to play it. Let's get into the Warmers.
Yeah. We'll be right back.
Pedro Show last music for this edition. Chunk started off with The Warmers doing No One Like Me, No One Like Me. Rob Dobbins Speck with Untitled. The Warmers, again, this one is Mad at the Man. Head Boggle after this is East Bay, Oaktown. Harvest Season. Then The Warmers with Walkin' Solves It. After that, Chip Kimmon, The Abolition of the Concept of Performance. Do you recognize that name, Chip Kimmon?
Yeah, from the Dills.
Right. Yeah. Now he's doing a dance, the electric, on the, you got a tabletop. Right? That's what he's doing. Yeah. In the Red Records, he just came up with a dance. Yeah, you know, we lost Tony a couple of years ago.
I heard that, yeah.
It was a big blow. I saw him the day before. Chip called me. He said, you got to come see Tony. And it was like when I saw my pop with the cancer. Yeah, it was. And he wrote on my bass, look, I hope this ain't too romantic, Mike. And he wrote, love you. 19, because on the first Dills record, he's Tony 19, because he thought punk bands shouldn't have brothers in the same band, right? So no Chip Kimmon, Tony Kimmon, no. Chip Kimmon, Tony 19.
Hell yeah, that's a badass name.
It really is, and I got on my 56 P bass. And then finally, The Warmers with Red Light Runner. Red Light Runner, what, some motherfucker who doesn't obey the traffic? T-bone your ass. What do you got planned music? Well, of course, what's coming up now is Hammerhall gigs, right?
Yeah.
Have you ever thought of an Alec McKay record?
No.
Where you're the shot caller? It's not like you have to play everything, but you could be like the rudder man and give direction.
Yeah. No, the only thing I thought of a long time ago was I became obsessed with a movie that I saw when I was 14. It's now more available, but I'd only seen it once in this, like, screening room at the American Film Institute. It was called Shell Shock Rock, and it was about these kids in Belfast, Northern Ireland, who were into punk rock, but they're all 14-year-old, like, they were my age at that time, and I loved all the bands. There's all these, like, really early Irish bands. I mean, Simple Fingers are in there, but also Undertones and Rudy, and I can't, there was a whole bunch of these early Northern Ireland bands, and I wanted to do a thing where I got a band, we would just do that whole, like, just do the soundtrack or whatever, just the music that's in that movie. And a friend of mine was all about it. They're going to, but I chickened out because I can't remember everybody else's lyrics. I can only do mine.
Okay, so then even more good reason to have an Alec McKay record. Then you don't have to worry about it. Right. Now, I'm just curious, of course. It's like fantasy baseball or football or something. And I was just thinking, where you were the shot caller, you know, where you it would be just amazing. So one day, one way, maybe. But
I won't do it. I'll do it. Can you recommend it? It's a good idea.
Yeah. And nowadays, right, people can fly in parts through the internet. So they don't even have to be there in the D.C. area, you know. I've made whole albums with people I've never even fucking met. Actually, I started doing this like 10-something years ago before the situation. But, you know, of course, being in the room with somebody, something. But in another way, there's something advantage is not having the dude in the room. Look, you've had a life of music, man. What advice would you give to a 14-year-old that you met trying to get into it?
Oh man, don't listen to me or anybody else. That's what my advice would be. Just do it.
That's the dilemma of being a skeptic, right? You know, the dilemma of being a skeptic, right? You'd have to be like skeptical of skepticism. So, I'm lying. It's only half. I didn't mean it. You know, I didn't really mean it. Because you're asking the guy not to listen to you. But that's the thing you're telling.
That's right. The first thing to do is don't do what I
say. That means he's going to, like, totally listen to you, right? I mean, I'm getting all Spock on your ass.
There is
getting all logical Spock on you there. Alec, it's been quite an honor. If, whatever you get creative, you know. I know you did a book of poetry, right?
No, it's the lyrics to, I mean, a chapbook that's got lyrics to to Hammered Home.
That's all right. Bobby Dylan would call that. Anyway. Yeah. Even if you want to read poetry or your lyrics, you're welcome back to show anytime. Thank you so much for being with me and Brother Matt today.
Yeah, definitely.
It's a pleasure and an honor, and I love you, Mike Watt.
Love you right back.
I'm really happy to be here. I'd love to talk to you, man.
Okay. People, November 30, 2022, edition of Pedro shall keep your pattern right.
Yeah.